Hi, this is Rabbi Eric Levy. I'm pleased to bring to you the fifth aliyah of Parshat Vayechi. These blessings and end of exile prophecies now continue with the son of God, Gimel Dalad, who is the second of the children born to the handmaidens Bilhah and Zilpah. The two following God will also be handmaiden tribes. God Gidud Yigudenu Vehu Yagud Akev. God, a battalion will raid it, but he, God, will raid it from behind or attack it afterwards. Onkelos relates this to the prophecy of God choosing land of the tribe of God. And again, when I say God, I mean Gimel Dalet, not G-O-D. The tribe of God chooses land on the other side of the Jordan River. However, it's willing to go over the river to the west bank of the Jordan River to help the rest of Israel with its conquest. Another possibility, also connected to the fact that it's on the other side of the Jordan River, is the fact that God saw tremendous troubles from its enemies because it was isolated essentially on the wrong side of the Jordan River. It was attacked by Mesha of Moab and by Ammon. There are stories in Divrei Yamim that refer to this. Now, Reuben also lived there and also suffered, but it could be that Jacob by Reuven, Jacob was focusing on a more pressing issue than the fact that it would be living on the wrong side of the River Jordan or the east bank of the River Jordan, and that would cause it to be attacked by its enemies, and without any kind of national support because everybody else was on the other side of the Jordan River. By Reuven, Jacob is really concerned about the fact that Reuven had a former status of the firstborn, which was lost, and that was something he had to focus on. By God, he could really express the idea that because it's living sort of on the far side, it will be attacked quite a bit. May Asher Shemeina Lachmo, Behu Yitain Ma'adzene Melech. The next son is Asher, and it says, from Asher will be rich food, and he will supply the delicacies of the king. This is a promise of rich land, and in the end, as I said before, especially if you look at Asher's blessing from Moshe, it seems that Asher will be not only getting the richest land, but the seashore land that here seems to be promised to Zevulun, although he won't get it in the end. But in this case, there is this one line for Asher, and there is a possibility that it means that instead of supplying troops, it would be able to supply goods and foods for the king. But the sense is positive in any event. Naphtali ayalash luchan otein imrei shafer. Naphtali is a doe, a female deer, let loose, which causes beautiful words, i.e. to be said about her. Although imrei shafer could also mean beautiful offspring. Many commentators say this refers to Barak, who fought alongside the tribal leader Devorah to defeat the Canaanite enemy entrenched in the Jezreel Valley. That happens in the book of Shoftim. The other possibility, at the end of the line is simply that they had beautiful, beautiful children, or perhaps he was a very beautiful person, and that resulted in very beautiful offspring. Finally, we get to Rachel's kids, starting with Joseph. The language here by Joseph is very poetic and hard to pin down even what the plain sense is, to say nothing of what the metaphors are referring to. However, overall, it seems that Jacob is not referring to the future here. There is a blessing, as you'll see, but he's not referring so much to what will happen in the future, but he's defining Joseph's very high attributes and qualities based on the experiences that Joseph went through in the past, as we will see. And those experiences will then tell Jacob or speak to Jacob and say, this is the responsibility that you should have for the nation because of what you were able to do in your young life. Bein porat Yosef, bein porat ale ayin, banot tzada ale shur. Joseph is a fruitful one on the wellspring that is planted perhaps on the wellspring. Its children, meaning its roots and its vines, Joseph's roots and vines, since the metaphor, as I said, seems to be of a fruitful plant which is planted by the wellspring that grows richly, and its roots, it's banot sa'ade ale shur, they climb over the walls, which means he's just so successful even when he comes into the face of obstacles. Rashi, following the Aramaic translation, translates banot literally, saying it is referring to the girls of Egypt who would climb up to see. The word shur can mean wall, but it could also mean to view or to see. They would see his beauty. Or some would say they would climb up so that Joseph would look at their beauty. And this latter interpretation, Rashi's interpretation, is meant to focus in on the story of Joseph, who was sorely tried by Potiphar's wife because of his beauty, and probably other women also that the Torah doesn't relate to us, but nonetheless managed to hold fast to his morals and religion, even though it got him into a huge amount of trouble. But either way, whether he was set upon by women, or whether he was just wonderfully successful overcoming all walls and obstacles, he managed all of his challenges. And they caused him bitterness, and they ganged up against him, or perhaps it means they fought against him. The word robu may come from the word riv, to fight. Archers, literally owners of arrows, set their hatred against him. This is referring, no doubt, to the brothers or others who hated him for his success, whether it was before he went to Egypt or after he went to Egypt. The Targum Yonatan, another Aramaic translation, which has very old material but was put together around 600 to 700 of the Common Era, says it was those who spoke Lashon Hara of him because of his success. So, Joseph had no shortage of people who hated him or were jealous of him. And in this case, metaphorically, of those who shot arrows at him, maybe even literally, if we think of in terms of violence. It seems likely, however, this is referring pretty much to his brother's plots against him, since after Jacob dies, that same expression, vayistimuhu, here it says they hated him. When Jacob dies, the brothers are very nervous that Joseph will take revenge on them, and they use the same word, that he will be yistomotam, that he will essentially direct anger towards him, and therefore in the idea that they were worried that he would do to them what they did to him. It seems that this verse is referring to the brothers' hatred and their plots against him. And keeping with the arrow metaphor, let's see what happens in the face of all this onslaught of arrows. Vateshev be'itan kashto v'yafozu zoroe yadav midei abir Yaakov misham roe even Yisrael. But his bow remained firm. His limber arms danced. The word vayafozu comes from the word root pazaz, pei zayin zayin, which is used by King David when he is dancing v'fazez v'farker with all of his strength in front of the Aron Kodesh. So the image, it's hard to pin down the exact translation of the word, but the image is of an archer whose hands are whirring so fast, they're pulling back so far on the string that arrows are whizzing from him like some kind of automatic weapon, which means he was able to return and stand strong to any kind of onslaught against him. And he is able to do this because, returning to the verse, not because of his own powers, but by the hand of Jacob's strength, Midei Abir Yaakov, which is a reference to God, of course, who made Jacob strong, Roe Even Yisrael, from there, the shepherd, the rock of Israel. The poetry is beautiful here as the references to God become more and more direct, that his strength comes from not just the Abir Yaakov, not just the Ro'eh and the Evan of Yisrael, but Me'el Avicha Vayazireka Ve'et Shaddai Vivarecheka Birchot Shamayim Me'al Birchot Tahom Rovetzetachat Birchot Shaddayim Varachem. The God of your father, he will assist you. The God, in this term, Shaddai, meaning a powerful nature of God, he will bless you. Blessing from the heavens above, Shamayim Me'al is probably like Shamayim Ma'al. The blessings of the deep or the abyss which lies below, the blessings of the breasts and of the wombs. Now there is a lot going on here, and no doubt each of these blessings, which comes with a slightly different image, has a very distinct spiritual meaning. But the essential difference is that the success comes from God's love that is limitless, and that it is like a mother's love, the blessings that a mother has for her baby when she is nursing him or her at her breast and resting, and the baby is resting on her stomach. Birchot avicha gavru al birchot horai ad tavat Ot Olam, the blessings of your father, that is me, were greater than the blessing of my parents, i.e. Avraham and Yitzchak, filling the desire of the hills of the world, which really means, I think the idea of desires of the hills of the world is really a sense that the whole world is filled up with them. I'm not sure, it's hard to say exactly what he means here, that the blessings of his, of your father, that is me, Jacob, is greater than that of the blessings of my fathers. The commentators offer various explanations, but here's my gut feeling. I think this is what he's saying. The Avram and Yitzchak certainly had great blessings, but their families did not turn into the nation of Israel. They did not have a cohesiveness. Avram not only had two kids, not just Yishmael and Yitzchak, and Yishmael himself was sent sort of out of the way. He was sent away from the religious continuity of the of what would become the monotheistic people started by Avram. But he had a lot of children with Keturah, and he sent them to the east as well. Yitzchak had two children, but one of them was exiled. But all of Yaakov's children, even Reuben, who was a little touch and go, and even Yehuda, who strayed and managed to live away, and in fact exiled himself from his brothers for 20 years, living among the Canaanites before he returned back home. Only Yaakov had the blessing of having 12 children who stayed together as, in the end, a cohesive group. And from them, the children of Israel, the very nation grew. And in that sense, what he's saying is that I, Jacob, managed to create a fledgling nation of Israel. God bless me with being able to ultimately create that nation that we were all waiting to create. In a way, I was able to do it in a sense, something that my father and my father's fathers could not do. And therefore, since this is a fledgling nation, the question is, what is Joseph's role in this fledgling nation? And then he continues, Tiena l'rosh Yosef ul'kodkod nazir echav. Joseph will be a leader, the crown on the head for his brothers. Now, the word nezer means crown, but it is also reminiscent of the word nazir. And that is the key, in my opinion, to what Jacob really wants from Joseph. You see, there can't be two kings, and that should bother you. That is, he's already told Yehuda he's going to be the king. Very clear, he's going to be the decision maker, the lawmaker for his brothers, lo yasur shevet mi Yehuda. We saw that in the previous Aliyah. So how could it be that he's also offering leadership to Joseph? So you could say, well, he's referring to the split kingdom that was started by Joseph's tribes, but that doesn't seem right to me. What I think is going on here is that there are two sources of authority in Judaism. There is the state and the church, so to speak. There is the king and the high priest. And in my opinion, Joseph was never meant to be the king. He was always meant to be the high priest, not the national ruler, but the spiritual ruler. And this is the sense of the Midrashim about the ketonet pasim, the striped coats, that it was really the cloak of the Kohen Gadol. This is why Yosef, if you think about the dream, the first dream that Joseph had, nobody bowed down to Joseph in the first dream. Joseph's wheat bunch turned into an altar, a matzeva, v'hinei kama alumati v'gam nitzava, turned into a matzeva, and the other brothers' wheat sheaves are not bowing to Joseph, but they're bowing down to the altar, which Joseph is standing next to it, just like a priest would stand next to his altar when people were bringing in their wheat sacrifices. The word nazir, let's return to that. A nazir is this person who takes upon himself very ascetic restrictions on an attempt to raise up his holiness to a priest-like level. No contact with the dead, limits no alcohol. And keep in mind that all of these things that he said Joseph was able to do, the idea of resisting temptation, of maintaining an extremely holy level in spite of all kind of temptations, the ability to stand fast against the enemy slings and arrows, this is something that Joseph is good at, which means Joseph was meant to lead the nation not militarily, not politically, but spiritually. Yehuda was supposed to be the national leader, the political leader, i.e. the king. But Yosef, in my humble opinion, was always intended by Jacob to be the spiritual leader or the high priest. That's my read of it. I really think that's the way Jacob wanted it to be. And in fact, there's a midrash about how after Reuben lost his double portion, that double portion, which was referred to here as Yeter Se'et and Yeter Oz, is that one was the priesthood and the kingship, and that he lost both of them. And then Jacob divided it between Joseph getting the priesthood and Judah getting the kingship. The fact that it didn't work out that way in the end historically. When they came out of Egypt, Yosef didn't seem to be in a priest position, didn't seem to be. Moshe assigned the firstborns of every tribe to take the priesthood responsibilities, going to this, back to this idea of biological firstborns, which never really works out. Now, they lost it at the golden calf, and Levi picks it up, but if you think of the, of what happened in the golden calf, there's the famous medrash that how was the calf created? That they threw in Joseph's name into the crucible, into the cauldron, and out came the golden calf. And in fact, the golden calf is a symbol of no other tribe than Joseph. All this hints to the fact that when Moshe disappeared, it was likely that Joseph's tribe took up the mantle, of spiritual leadership that Moses had had, that Moshe had had, and that the symbol was that of Joseph, and in fact the golden calf would be recreated in Beit El under the kingship of a king who was from the Joseph tribe. And what this says to me is that Joseph was made kind of a misuse of their priestly inclinations, that they remember what Jacob wanted from them, that they should be the priest, but they misused it and produced something that was very negative. Who took up arms against them? It was Levi who supported Moshe and said, this is not the way we do priesthood. This is not the way we do religion at all. So Joseph, I think, in the desert, lost their priesthood to the tribe of Levi, who was able to serve that function much better. Why that was a change, why Jacob's blessing did not really come to fruition. Well, we see that the Menashe and Ephraim thing didn't work out that well, and of course, as much as Jacob could give blessings and predict the future is a very, very difficult thing to predict. And in the next Aliyah, we will have the final blessing for the youngest member of the family, and the story will continue with the death and burial of Jacob and the relationship between Joseph and his brothers.